Monster Man, Episode 365, Monstrous Manual, Introduction. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're kicking off a new season of Monster Man. We started out with 1977's Monster Manual for 1st edition Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. Then we did the Fiend Folio from 1981, Monster Manual 2 from 1983, and then the Creature Compendium from 1986. Now we're jumping ahead a few more years in time, and we're taking a look at the Monstrous Manual for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And because this is a new edition, in a sense, of a book that we've already looked at, we're going to be treating this book a little bit differently from some of the ones that we've already examined. In this episode, I'm going to introduce the Monstrous Manual. I'm going to talk about its textual history. I'm going to talk about how I intend to approach it. And I'm going to talk about the sort of first glance differences between it and some of the other books that we've looked at. Before that, though, I have to thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And depending on the level that you pledge at, you'll get different rewards. At the $1 level, occasional bonus content. I try to put out about an episode a month. At the $2 level, you'll get my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is in the middle of a season about Egyptian mythology. And at the $5 level, the opportunity to choose a topic for a Monster Man special episode. So thank you very much to new Patreon backer, Ben Bulow. Ben, I'm really glad that you're enjoying the show. All right, let's talk Monstrous Manual. So when AD&D 2nd Edition came out, the game had to deal with the problems of being the first new edition of AD&D in, what, 12 years? 1977, the Monster Manual comes out, and then I think 1989 is when AD&D 2nd comes out. I mean, it might be a year or two before that. I don't know off the top of my head. But the new edition attempted to address many of the lessons learned from the previous edition, not only in terms of mechanics and content, but also in terms of presentation. And one of those was something that I've spoken about before on this podcast, which is the difficulty of running a hot fix on a hardback. When AD&D first came out, I don't know to what extent they were envisioning publishing new monster books, but there was a good deal of demand for them. Over the lifetime of the game, we have three major monster books, not counting other supplements that also may have had monsters in them. So we've got the Monster Manual itself, we've got the Fiend Folio, and then we've got Monster Manual 2. And this led to a kind of problem, which was, you know, people were uncertain about whether they could include monsters from those later books in modules. Some really caught on and some didn't. And from an organizational perspective, it was challenging. So take a section which appears in more than one book, like dinosaurs or devils. If you want to look up the stats for a particular type of dinosaur, you don't need to know its name. I mean, you need to know its name, but the thing that you need to know about it is not its name, but which book it appeared in. Even though the books aren't like themed in any way, there's no way to know when, you know, you have to go to the Monster Manual 2, look in the index, and go from there to the correct book. So you might need to use two hardbacks just to find the stats of a particular monster. And of course, the nature of these monster books means that, like, now no method of organizing those creatures makes sense, right? You can't have all your monsters in alphabetical order because they're split up by books. You can't group them together by topic, etc. So when AD&D 2nd Edition came out, the monster supplement, the Monstrous Compendium, not the Monstrous Manual, was released in an unusual format. It was a set of three hole-punched kind of glossy pages, I think, with card dividers. And what this meant was that, you know, you would take your three-hole punch pages and you would put them in your official Monstrous Compendium binder, or frankly, in any three-ring binder, and then you could organize them how you liked. Maybe you wanted to have all of the monsters that were undead together, or maybe you wanted to have all of the monsters that exist in your campaign setting together, or maybe you want to pop open the binder and pull out the pages for the monsters that you're going to need for tonight's game to throw them in your Trapper Keeper so you can bicycle across town to your friend's house. In a way, this has some organizational advantages. And TSR leaned heavily into this format, releasing 19 installments. You know, so there were core ones, there was an annual every year, which included sort of, which monsters had been released in modules and Dragon magazine articles that year. There were special ones for Darkson or Ravenloft or Spelljammer or what have you. It's not a bad idea. This was kind of a fad in the late 1980s, early 1990s. It was around this time, I think in 1990, that the second version of Who's Who in the DC Universe comes out, and that too followed the binder format. I know because I actually did collect that thing, and you know, I put them all in a binder. And they weren't great, you know. The pages were a little flimsy and they had a tendency to tear out, especially when you had a lot of them in the same binder. That might have been my fault. Maybe there was just a sale on that kind of printing, you know. Maybe this was the first time companies were being told they could have their stuff printed on hole-punched glossy, and they just kind of decided to get in on it. Either way, there were people who weren't thrilled about the Loose Leaf Monsters Compendium format, and they requested a more traditional hardback. Later editions would not return to this binder format. I wonder if people just kind of realized that if you were going to do this sort of reorganizable type of monster card thing, the future of that product was going to be digital. Anyway, people who weren't happy with the Monsters Compendium, you know, requested a hardback and thus the Monsters Manual, which collects the first two volumes of the Monsters Compendium, plus some monsters from other supplements. As a result of this textual background, the credits page of this book is an absolute mess because it's a hybrid of two books, which in turn were updatings of previous books, many previous books, and it has a huge contributors list with dozens of original creators listed, including all of the people that you would expect. So before we jump into the book itself, a quick word on systems. I have never played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. I don't think I'm likely to, but I'm sure I'll figure it out. Reading the book, a couple of things stand out immediately. The first is that the large one or two page spreads are pretty convenient, right? You can imagine just having, you know, that you have that one page in front of you. It's quite like clear and readable. The section headings are in a different color of text, and there's a nice full color illustration on each page because this rulebook, unlike the first edition Monster Manual, is in color. Now, that color is maybe not always put to the most fantastic use. There is a range of art here in the book. Interestingly, they have assigned different artists to do different jobs, like to cover different categories of monsters. You could kind of see that in the original Monster Manual and, you know, in some of the other ones. But I think this is, you know, the division is much more explicit here. Now, none of the art in this is bad, but it's all a bit matter of fact, right? We very seldom see the creatures in action. We just see like a little portrait of them. It's very good at giving you a description. What does this monster look like? But it's not evocative or inspiring in the same way that the art in the 1977 Monster Manual, which is much more inconsistent in terms of its quality, is. I will make an exception for one of the artists because one of the categories of monster in this book has been given over to Tony DiTerlizzi, and I like me some Tony DiTerlizzi. And again, none of the art is bad. Like, the worst of it is just house style. It's just not very exciting. So we start out with some monsters that we are already familiar with, and my repeats policy here is that I'm not going to cover any monster that has previously appeared in an earlier season unless it has changed or my view of it has changed or I want to point out an especially nice picture. And that means that of the first three monsters, I'm not really going to cover any of them. Those are the Arakocra, the Aboleth, and the Ankeg, although I will say that the Aboleth and the Ankeg both have lovely Deterlitzy illustrations. Although, as I was reading the section on the Arakocra, my eye caught the detail, which I went back and checked, it is in the Fiend Folio, that the Arakocra carry heavy fletched javelins. A fletched javelin is called a dart. I mean, what's the difference? But anyway, they carry these big darts individually attached to their chests in leather sheaths. And looking at the picture of the Arakocra, which is right next to this, which is a real step down from the picture of the Fiend Folio, looking at the picture of the Arakocra, I just tried to envision this, right? So imagine that we're not dealing with something like what you or I would think of as a javelin. We're thinking of something more like a late Roman plumbata, which is basically a lawn dart, right? A big, heavy, relatively short projectile with a long, sharp point. And the Arakoka are going to wheel over you, basically just dropping these things like bombs. I believe that actually was done during the First World War. They would just throw basically big darts out of airplanes and hope that they landed on somebody. You might as well just drop rocks. And because the picture of the monster is right next to it, and because, remember, Arakokra don't have like wings coming out of their backs like angels. They are like birds, right? Their arms are wings. So they have prehensile feet, and then they have wings with hands at the ends of them, so that they can like fight and do things while they fly, but using their feet. So how the Arakokra is supposed to reach up with its legs and draw these weapons, which are holstered on its chest, I do not know. I also think, like, let's say for the sake of argument that one of these Plumbata weapons is about the size of a bowling pin. The notion of taking six bowling pins, strapping them individually to your chest, and if it specifically says that they're heavy, right? Presumably they're made of metal. That's got to be difficult to fly with. And then, you know, which direction are the points pointing? I think the points have got to be poking downward, kind of over the hip, and then the fletched ends are sticking up to the shoulder so that they can poke you real hard in the shoulder every time you flap your wing, which is pretty frequently. Now, I am not one of those people who wants to go, like, lol-owned about D&D monsters or whatever. I think that birdmen swooping overhead, dropping lawn darts on you is great. I think that's super cool. But I do think that it's maybe something that if you're going to put it in the description, you might want to ask somebody to draw it. Because when you read those words, what you visualize in your mind's eye looks real silly. And I don't think that that's what I'm intended to think about the Arakokra. So that just caught my eye, even though it is something that was in the previous book. I don't know that it had quite, you know, that I had envisioned it in its absurdity of these, you know, soaring bird people leaping off a cliff to, you know, ride the thermals and hunt you down, but doing so using giant darts attached to their chests, which they're fumbling for using their feet as they stoop to attack. So those three monsters, you know, we're not going to cover, I guess I just did, but we, you know, we're not going to cover in any detail. Now, next week, we do have a couple of new ones, and I'm quite looking forward to this because these are really our first Spelljammer monsters. You know, a lot of the monsters that are unfamiliar are going to come from settings that I don't know that much about, like Dark Sun or Spelljammer. So I'm really looking forward to getting to grips with some of those creatures, and I hope that you will join me again next week as we take a look at the Arcane and the Argus. In the middle of this week, $2 Patreon backers can look forward to a new episode of Patron Deities about Egyptian mythology, and at the end of the week, we're going to have a special episode covering a monster from the golden age of science fiction. So I hope that you'll join me for those on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.